The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, the hunt is on for werewolves on an episode of Escape. Richard Stark is your host for the soap opera Against the Storm, and Smellin' Ed McConnell sings for you on Aladdin Land. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Smilin' Ed McConnell sings for you on Aladdin Lamp, and Richard Stark is your host for the soap opera Against the Storm. Right now, the hunt is on for werewolves on an episode of Escape, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
You are alone in the dark forest, and behind you somewhere is the werewolf waiting to drink your blood. And you desperately desire the impossible, to escape.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully plotted to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to the backward world of Eastern Europe, where ancient superstitions still live in the minds of men. Tonight we escape with Jeffrey Household's grim story, Taboo.
Among semi-civilized peoples, there has always been widespread belief in werewolves, those fantastic creatures supposedly able to turn from man or woman into wolf and back again at will. This belief is still widespread among the simple folk of Eastern Hungary, in the district around Zweibergen, high in the gloomy Carpathian Mountains. And I must admit, not without some reason. Before the late war, I often spent my vacations in that area, drawn to the dark loneliness by the pull of my Slavic blood. It was the same with her, perhaps, and our kindred ancestry no doubt drew us together. Her name was Kira Vaughan, and she was there with her husband, a pleasant young Englishman. They were obviously much in love, and I felt almost like an intruder when I found myself the only other vacationer in the village. However, they made me welcome and invited me to dinner. It was an excellent dinner.
Won't you have some more strawberries, Mr. Shirabia?
Thank you, no, Mrs. Vaughan. I've eaten far too much already. I cannot say when I've had so excellent a dinner.
Thank you.
I'm sure I shall get nothing like it at the inn.
I should hate to have to stay at the inn.
You see, Shirabia, my wife is one of those delightful creatures who cannot stand to be shut in. She must run free, preferably in the woods, with her hair streaming in the wind. She's quite unusual.
Indeed she is, my dear Vaughan. And you may count yourself most fortunate.
Oh, I do. Where else should I find so good a cook?
Oh, very true. I've never tasted venison quite like that tonight. Delightful.
Thank you.
Another of her little victories. She delights in outdoing the ordinary housewife. She disdains the village shop and gets her meat right off the hoof.
Oh? You do your own hunting?
Oh, dear, no.
Not that. She's much too kind-hearted and loving a person for that. She's found a new source. The district game warden brings fresh venison to our door.
Oh, it's not he, but his son.
True, the game warden's slightly moronic son, who is, I'm sure, in love with her.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Oh, not so. It's quite understandable. I'm beginning to fall in love with her myself.
You see, my dear.
Thank you, sir.
Seriously, though, I can understand this wild desire to be free. This wish to, as you put it, run in the woods with the wind in your hair. It is some legacy of our Slavic blood, no doubt, yours and mine and the game warden's moronic son. Somehow we feel at home in these dark forests.
Oh, you too.
Yes.
And I don't. I confess it, I don't. There's something here that frightens me, something strange and inhuman and taboo.
Darling.
I'll confess something, Kiraviev. I don't like Kira to go out into these forests alone. Maybe I'm afraid that someday this emotional impulse of hers will get the better of her and she'll just disappear, like those two men last week.
Oh? What was that? Have I missed some exciting happening?
No, not really. Though you'd think so to hear the villagers talk. A fellow coming home through the woods after dark just disappeared. Probably got fed up with life here in the village and lit out for Budapest.
And what about the other one?
Oh, yes. Well, a search party went out the next day to look for the fellow. When they got back, they found one of their party was missing. Evidently, he'd taken the opportunity to skip out, too.
Is that what you really think?
Well, why not, my dear? If those men had been done away with, it might have been by something supernatural. And there's no such thing.
But might it not have been some wild animal?
Oh, the bears around here are harmless and the wolves are not in pack. At any rate, there would have been some sign, some blood, track, something. There was nothing. They simply disappeared, vanished, skipped out.
Richard, how can you be so callous?
You see the paradox? My wife, who loves the woods, believes the fantastic tales of the villagers. I, who confess to finding the woods strange and frightening, do not believe them.
Perhaps it is because you are frightened that you are afraid to believe them. What do the villagers say?
Well, you know this district well enough. They're talking of werewolves and such tommy rot. Oh, it's utterly fantastic.
Yes, to you, an Englishman, it would be.
And it isn't to you?
Fantastic, yes, I suppose, but perhaps Mrs. Vaughan and I, who feel at home in this forest, can understand and believe such fantasy a little more easily than you.
Yes. I remember many times as a child, I dreamt of being an animal. I thought then that I would love it. The freedom of the forest.
Exactly. That primitive instinct is so deep within us all. A heritage of some dim, distant past. In us Slavs, it lies closer to the surface. Takes very little to bring it to light.
Yes, that is true.
Well, you've placed my wife in a new life, Kiraviev. You'll have me suspecting her of changing into a wolf and running out to the forest to murder people.
Oh,
oh, please, Bourne. You take me too literally. And besides, it is a shame to spoil so delightful a dinner with so gloomy a conversation.
Right. Shall we go into the living room? There's a cheerful fire in there. And... Oh, yes. What is it, Frida?
Beg your pardon, sir. But a message just came from the village.
Oh? What is it?
They want you and Mr. Sheraviev to come down there now. They're organizing another search party.
What?
Yes. There's another man missing.
Kira! Catch her, Sheraviev. She's fainted.
It was only then I realized that these people were under a terrible tension. I was to learn very quickly that the whole village shared it. Every able-bodied man in the district was at the inn when we arrived. The magistrate explained the situation.
Mr. Gross, he went into the forest late this afternoon hoping to bag a blackcock for his supper. A little after dusk, a solitary shot was heard. That was 3 hours ago and he has not returned.
But only 3 hours? Isn't there a chance that he might still return?
A chance, perhaps, but the other two did not. It will do no harm to search for him. We may still be in time to save his life.
We searched most of the night, and then next morning, Vaughan and I went out again. We climbed to my favorite spot for hunting blackcock, then followed the trail down to the village, the trail the missing grocer would have taken. I was beginning to be a little exasperated at Vaughan. He seemed to be so casual and uninterested, as if he were convinced that this one, too, had merely skipped out. But I underestimated him. He was a skilled tracker, and suddenly he did show some interest.
Wait a minute. Someone has turned aside from the path here.
Hmm?
He was in a hurry. I wonder why.
I think you are right. There are some broken branches.
Why? Why here?
It's hardly likely anyone would go plunging into that thicket unless he had a reason.
Wait. See that big white rock behind the thicket? When you're being followed, it's comforting to have a clear space around you. You'd feel safe up on top of that rock with a gun in your hands if you got there in time.
You may be right. Let's go up.
Righto.
We forced our way through the underbrush to the rock. It was 30 feet high on the downslope side, and a hot spring at the foot of it bubbled out of a cavity scarcely 2 feet wide. We made our way up to the slope, around it, and came out on top. There was nothing there except for some ivy in the cracks and one small stunted tree.
Aha! Look at that.
Where?
The tree. The entire base has been shattered by a charge at close quarters. Perhaps that was the shot that was heard.
You're right. It must be. They say there is always a tree between you and it.
What do you mean, it?
The werewolf.
Well, this must have been a baby one then. That mark is only 6 inches off the ground. No, I think the man's gun went off as he fell. Perhaps he was followed too close as he scrambled up. About here would be where his body would have fallen.
Do you see anything? I don't. No blood stain.
Yeah, wait. Look here.
Oh, but it's just a tiny spot.
Well, it's enough. It's blood, all right. And something more. A tiny bit of tissue.
Let me see. Yes. Brain tissue. It must have come from a deep wound in the skull, made by something like an arrow or a bird's beak. Or maybe even a sharp tooth.
But where's the body? There is absolutely no other sign. No evidence of its being dragged off anywhere.
No, I can't see any either. It's very strange. But at least we know one thing, Vaughn. This man did not just skip out. This man was dead or dying.
When we brought our information back, the excitement of the village mounted. The peasants crossed themselves, and at the inn, the old tales were being told.
That's old Weiss, the game warden, talking now. And Josef Weiss, his son beside him.
The moronic son?
Yes. The old man is a character, too. Listen.
The biggest one my grandfather had seen. And it followed him in the forest. Time after time, he met it at twilight outside his cabin. And time after time, he fired at it point blank. But he couldn't hurt it. Then he pounded a silver penguin and loaded his gun with it. One shot and the wolf disappeared. But next day, they found Heinrich the cobbler dying in his house with a beaten silver coin in his belly.
Oh, fools! You believe such stupid talk.
Josef!
My grandfather used to tell the same story. Only when he told it, it happened to his grandfather. Anyone can see it didn't happen at all. Such things can't happen.
Josef, you call your father a liar.
I do.
Well, far from being a moron, Josef seems to have more sense than the others.
Perhaps. Josef, you're not afraid of this werewolf, then, eh?
I? No.
Why not? The whole village is frightened.
I'm used to walking alone in the woods at night. You've got to be a part of the forest, then you'll not be afraid of it.
You do believe in werewolves, then, eh?
I don't say a man can turn into a wolf, no. But I can understand why he'd want to.
Your theory again, Sharavyev.
Yes. I think I understand that too, Josef. But what does it feel like?
It feels as if the woods had got under your skin and you want to walk wild and crouch at the knees.
Yes. I think he's perfectly right.
And you explain it by some primitive urge?
Possibly. There may be many reasons. Physical hunger could be one. We sometimes forget that man was once a fleet-footed hunting animal with all the necessary instincts.
Hunger? Yes, we all know about that. About what it can do to a man.
I've been trapped in a cliff for 5 days, I know.
None of you have suffered hunger as we did in the prison camp during the war. None of you knows what it is to eat.
Josef, let's not talk about it. He He gets so upset remembering.
Well, we'll have to go on searching for the body and for the werewolf.
You'll not find it. Not until you arm yourselves with silver bullets.
Perhaps it is gone now, whatever it is. The search parties may have frightened it away.
It wasn't frightened by the first search party. It simply took one of them. Now it is still here. And it will strike again. You may be sure of that.
The whole village believed that Josef Weiss was right. They traveled in the woods by twos now. No one went alone. For a week, village life was disrupted. The men beat the forest. The women tried to comfort each other. Kira wore herself out trying to be useful. The village women could not help loving her. But there was something else. Something strange. One day I spoke to Frida, the maid, about it.
Ah, yes, she is a strange one, Mr. Sharivia. Even now I have seen her going out to walk alone in the woods at twilight. The women in the village think she is possessed.
What do you mean, possessed?
I hesitate to say, sir.
Come, tell me.
They are beginning to say sometimes the werewolf can be a woman.
At first, the suggestion seemed so ridiculous to me that I hesitated to speak of it. But then I decided to tell Vaughn before this rumor could reach Kira herself. He was naturally much upset.
That settles it, Sharavev. We've got to do something.
Something, yes, but what?
There's only one thing we can do. Track down this supposed werewolf.
But that's what we've been trying to do for a week. How can we
do... It's really very simple. We'll offer him bait.
Bait? Who will be this bait?
You and I, Sharavev, if you're game.
Why, yes, of course I'm game.
Good.
But how? Are you going to tie me to a tree and watch out with a gun?
That's about right. Only we needn't tie you up. And since it was my idea, you can have first turn with the gun. Are you a good shot?
Right.
This is no time for false modesty.
Yes, I'm a good shot.
Very well. It'll be night, and we'll have to shoot with only the moonlight.
Where do we go? To the rock?
Exactly. And the sooner the better. Tonight?
Tonight.
And say nothing, absolutely nothing, to anybody. Especially to Kira.
I understand. This is between us. Either we win, or we simply disappear. It was difficult getting away without telling Kira what we were going to do. She seemed to sense that something was wrong, and she sat staring after us with strange, angry eyes. In the village, Vaughn and I parted and made our ways to the rock separately. I reached there first and settled myself on top of the rock, almost covered by the ivy, the gun across my knees. Presently, Vaughn appeared on the path, and I gave the signal that I was there and ready. The trap was set. In the eerie stillness of the dark forest, we waited. Vaughn paced slowly on the path. I kept the gun sight trained a yard in back of him as he walked. Minutes passed in silence. Hours went by. Nothing happened. It was almost midnight, the end of our vigil. Vaughn waved his hand and started off down the trail. He would go fast in case he was followed, taking a shortcut down an old timber slide. He'd be in the village in 10 minutes. I was to follow presently. Then suddenly I got an intense feeling of dread. I was alone on the rock. My spine tingled, and then I heard a quick rustle in the ivy behind me. Something brushed my face. It was only a bird. A nightbird had lit in the ivy and now swooshed past me and flew away. My nerves were still tingling when I got back to the village. Next day, when I went to see Vaughn, he gave me a warning glance. Kira was suspicious. I could see the question in her eyes when she greeted me.
So, here is the other culprit. Which of you is most to blame for keeping such late hours?
Why, I suppose to keep peace in the family, I should say it is I.
No, you can't get him off that easily.
I'm the only culprit, my dear. You see, I've never hunted deer at night. I asked Sharavev to help me.
I suppose you shoot the poor things while they sleep.
Oh, no, while they're having their dinner, if possible.
You're cruel and heartless, both of you.
Oh, it's no use letting her start an argument, Shuraviev. I'll go get us a drink.
Oh, yes, thank you. I'd like that. Why do you look at me like that?
Was the hunting good last night?
No, not very. We didn't get anything, as you see. I'm afraid you'll still have to depend upon Josef for your venison.
Where did you hunt?
Why, simply in the forest. Nowhere in particular.
You're not telling me the truth, are you?
My dear, I don't know what you're thinking, but I assure you...
Oh, never mind. I suppose it is best I don't know. But take care of him, please.
Of course I will.
If anything should happen to him...
But what could happen?
You know... You understand these things.
That night, I was the bait. And I confess, walking there on the moonlit path, the dense undergrowth pressing close on both sides, the forest all around me, that I felt a strange terror. But nothing happened. Once, a bear ambled across the path, paused, sniffed, and disappeared into the brush. Then a little later, I thought I saw a flicker of white in the clearing below, but it never reappeared, and I decided it must have been a ripple of grass in the moonlight. At midnight, we returned to the village, and I was beginning to wonder if our trap would ever be sprung.
We must keep on, Shuraviev. I have a feeling that tomorrow night, perhaps, or the next night...
I'm game as long as you are, but so far we've only lost sleep.
I've got to keep on. Have you forgotten about Kira, the things they're saying about her?
No, of course not, but surely these people would not do anything to her.
It's not that. It's what it might do to her spirit if she were to hear those insane rumors. She's so sensitive, I don't like to think about it.
Then, shall we go out again tomorrow night?
Yes. You must come to dinner, though, first. Weiss is bringing down more venison. Kira will want you to come.
All right. Till tomorrow night, then. After dinner, we went out for our third night on the rock. Vaughn was the bait tonight, and I the watcher. The forest was alive with sound. A deer coughed. The bear came ambling back, as woolly and harmless as a dog. I was watching him when suddenly he paused and sniffed the air, then disappeared into the trees. The animal sounds quieted one by one, and a tense stillness fell over the forest. My hand tightened on the gun, and suddenly I saw it. That flicker of white moving fast through the trees. It was coming up the path toward Vaughn, a soft, bulky white blur, coming surprisingly fast. Vaughn's back was turned. He did not see it. My finger tightened on the trigger. It was only a few yards away when he turned.
Kira!
I started to press the trigger.
No, Sheriff, no!
Richard!
Kira, what are you doing here?
Oh, darling, I was looking for you. I looked last night, too. Oh, Richard!
Kira, you shouldn't have. It was foolish, terribly foolish.
Richard, there was something after me. I know it. That's why I was running.
Kira, you shouldn't be out here alone.
But what about you? Where's Shuraviev?
He's up there on the rock, covering me with his rifle. I'm perfectly safe. I'll show you. I'll hold out my handkerchief like this. Now, Shuraviev, put a hole in that.
I stared for a moment at the white square of handkerchief, then at the white of her coat. My lips were dry. My finger felt numb on the trigger.
Come on, Shuraviev, the handkerchief.
Please, God, don't let me miss.
There, you see, my dear? I'm perfectly safe.
They went down the path together, and I followed after a moment. 100 yards from the timber slide, I knew I was being followed. Even before I heard something in the brush behind me, I stopped and turned around. It moved past me, cutting off my retreat. Now I stood alone in terror, but it was still in the brush. If only I could make the timber slide. I got down safely. I went straight to Vaughn. He came out of the house to talk to me. I told him what had happened. His reaction surprised me.
Shuraviev, I'm sorry I had to leave you up there to face it alone, but I had to bring her down.
Of course, I know that.
And you must believe this. She never left me. We came down together, arm in arm. We came straight down. You must believe that.
But of course, why should I think differently?
Then you must realize, whoever it was up there in the brush following you, it couldn't have been Kira.
Good heavens, Juan. Do you think I believe that preposterous story?
Well, didn't you? Even up there on the rock, when you hesitated about firing at the handkerchief, didn't you believe it might be Kira?
No. Why, no, of course not. But I did. Vaughn knew my thoughts almost better than I knew them myself. Yes, that was why my lips were dry and my finger numb when I pressed the trigger. I had refused to admit it even to myself. And now was I sure, even now. That night, Vaughn was excited.
We're going to get it tonight. After last night, it'll be there waiting for us.
Yes, I think you are right. But if you are, we wouldn't want anyone else to come walking in on us. It might cause confusion.
Don't worry. Kira has promised to stay at home. She says we're doing our duty and she won't interfere. Do you think this is our duty?
No.
Neither do I. I never feel that anything I enjoy can be my duty. And now, I really enjoy this. Tonight, I'd like to be the bait.
No, it's my turn. I won't give it up. Besides, if it's the revenge you want, you have the gun.
That's so. All right, then. Tonight, you'll be the bait.
That night, for the first time, I regretted ever getting into this mess. As I paced up and down the path, my nervousness grew. Tonight, it would surely come. I felt it. But would Vaughn shoot straight and quick enough? The hours went by. Clouds kept scudding over the moon, leaving me in deep darkness for minutes at a time. I was really beginning to be frightened. Then a fraction of a second before it happened, I knew it was coming. There was a hot breath on my neck, a crushing weight on my shoulder, something hard against my skull, and the crack of Vaughn's rifle. Vaughn! Vaughn!
Shiraviev, are you all right?
Yes, I think so. What was it?
A man. A winged. Come on. I'm going in after him.
All right, I'm coming. Vaughn, where did he go?
I can hardly believe it, but he went right into this hot spring under the rock.
But there's hardly opening enough for a rab.
He went under the water. Come on.
Wait, Vaughn, I'm coming with you. We plunged into the spring, wriggling our way forward, not knowing what to expect. Vaughn held the rifle high above the water, but there wasn't room enough for our heads. We had to hold our breath and plunge forward.
Luckily, it was only a few feet.
I emerged and took a breath. Then I heard Vaughn fire.
Ah, got him.
Where? Shine the flashlight.
There, at the other side of the cave.
Yes. Who would have thought there would be a cave here?
Oh, that anyone could have gotten through that spring.
It was a perfect hiding place.
Yes, but it does him no good now. Turn him over. Let's see who our werewolf is.
Yes. Why? It's Weiss. Huh. Josef Weiss, the game warden's son.
Well, why didn't we think of that? We all knew he was not quite sane.
More than that, he almost told us. Remember, he said, I do not believe a man can turn himself into a wolf. But I know why he'd want to.
Yes, and he described the feeling to walk wild and crouch at the knees.
He knew that feeling. He knew it too well. Beside Josef Weiss, we found a murder weapon. It was a patented animal killer, a heavy iron muzzle that gripped the scalp, a heavy spike that was released by a spring. His hiding place was even more perfect than we had supposed. When the magistrate investigated, he found a passage from that cave which led underground for more than a mile, and finally to the game warden's house, where a ladder led into his cellar.
Undoubtedly, Weiss found that dry underground river one day and realized he could use it. Perhaps that is what caused his mind to snap.
Yes. It released a long, pent-up spring in him, like that weapon he used. He saw that he could run in the woods like an animal, disappearing and reappearing with perfect safety. It even offered a place to bury his victims without a trace.
And so your theory proved correct, that there's a murderous, primitive instinct lurking in some people.
Yes.
Well, it's all explained, excepting what he did with the bodies.
It would serve no useful purpose to speculate on that now.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Kira, you haven't said anything.
Why did you have to shoot him?
Kira, he was a murderer. He tried to murder Shiraviev.
Is it murder when a wolf kills? A dumb animal? Frightened of intruders?
Kira!
You understand what I mean, don't you, Shiraviev? You understood that night when you shot the handkerchief, just as I have. It might have happened to any of us, you see.
Kira, What do you mean?
Take me away from here, Richard. Just take me away quickly.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robson, and tonight brought you Taboo by Jeffrey Household, adapted for radio by John Dunkel with Paul Fries as Shuravyev, Marta Mitrovich as Kira, and Morgan Farley as Vaughn. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Next week...
You are standing on a bridge over Owl Creek with a noose around your neck. You have only a few seconds left to live. A few seconds left to plan your escape.
Next week, we escape with Ambrose Bierce's famous story, An Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge. Good night, then, until the same time next week when we again offer you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and an episode of Escape. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, Richard Stark is your host for the soap opera Against the Storm. But first, here's Smiling Ed McConnell with Aladdin Lamp as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Let's sing a song you don't hear every day. It's your old friend calling again. Hello, sweetheart. It's Smiling Ed McConnell, the Aladdin Lamp Man again. Have you heard this one lately, honey? Hold me. Honey, won't you hold me? Hold me. Never let me go. Take me. Honey, won't you take me, never to forsake me, 'cause I love you so. Oh, thrill me, let your kisses thrill me, just like you alone can do. Hold me. Tenderly enfold me, never try to hold me from you. Now let's tell her all about it, yes, sweet as we can. You hug her, brother. Kisses thrill me, just like you alone can do. Hold me tenderly, enfold me. Never try to hold me from you. Well, I hope I can hold the friendship of you sweethearts for the rest of my life. One thing certain, honey, I'll never try to sell you girls anything that isn't good for you. Never have and never will. That's why I'm so proud of the many fine nationally advertised products we carry at our store. Products like the nationally advertised Aladdin electric lamps and Aladdin Whippolite shades. We're mighty pleased to be able to invite you into our store to look at our wide selection of these fine lamps. There are floor lamps, table lamps, and bridge lamps in a variety of styles, and each one topped by a lovely washable Whippolite shade. Come in and see them the next time you go shopping. And now for our hymn. One of God's days, every dark cloud hiding the sunlight of heavenly grace, He will remove and face to face. We shall see Jesus, one of God's days. One of God's days, beautiful day. We shall in glory sing His praise. Fighting's all done, victory's won. We shall see Jesus, one of God's days. And this is Spider Ned McConnell, the Aladdin Lamp Man, saying thanks for listening, honey. And be sure to be on hand next time, because we'll be back to sing a song you don't hear every day when we all come calling again.
Against the Storm.
Gee, he was 18 like your brother Joe. How old would he be now if he hadn't been killed in the Civil War?
Well, let me see. Today is May 30th, 1894.
Jason McKinley Allen remembers a day from his own and Porky Mason's country childhood. Today in Against the Storm. We bring you another chapter of Against the Storm, written by Sandra Michael and presented by the makers of Ivory. Now, today is the last time this week I can remind you about the marvelous special offer new Double Quick Ivory Flakes is making. Now listen, we're offering you a wonderful opportunity to get a pair of beautiful Boulevard brand pure silk crepe stockings at a truly tremendous saving. Yes, and we've selected these fine three-thread crepe stockings with an eye to all the new fashion points, an eye to long-wearing qualities and beauty, too. They're full-fashioned, all silk from top to toe, and made by a famous hosiery maker. They're knit inside out, so you get that wonderful smooth dull finish on the outside. And that dull finish makes these stockings very flattering to wear. And the color, it's called Tierra, a lovely suntan shade that goes with every color in the rainbow. And now about long wear. Well, listen, these stockings have a heel and foot that are designed in a different way. No side seams where a mean little run so often start. And say, if you'll remember to take care of these stockings with new Double Quick Ivory Flakes every night, well, it'll help you get wonderfully long wear. We showed them to hundreds of women, and most of them said they thought these stockings were worth at least half again as much as we're asking.
In fact, dozens of them said they thought they should cost a dollar or more. Oh, but look, here's how easily and thriftily you can get one, two, or three pairs of these Boulevard brand stockings for yourself. For each pair you want, simply send 50 cents and one Ivory Flakes box top, either size. Address Ivory Flakes, Cincinnati, Ohio. Stockings come in sizes 8.5 to 11, and be sure to include your stocking size. Remember, simply send 50 cents with your name and address and one Ivory Flakes box top to Ivory Flakes, Cincinnati, Ohio. And hurry, friends, because this offer is limited. Good in the United States only. Professor Allen is standing on the porch this morning, thinking, or at least feeling, that this is Sunday. But today, instead of churchgoers, he sees a group of children, 6 or 7 of them, walk briskly past, around the corner and off beneath the sunny trees. Some of them carried flowers. All of them carried small, rather inflexible flags. The sight awoke some vague suggestion of a very old memory in the professor's mind. He was trying to get hold of whatever it was when he heard the screen door open.
Margaret? Ah, good, it is you.
Oh, well, now, who did you think it might have been? Nobody else at home this morning.
Really? The girls and Penny all go to church?
No, they've gone to the song festival at the soldiers' home.
Song festival? Oh, my word, I was thinking this was Sunday.
Seems like it. But it's Memorial Day.
Memorial Day? Of course, that's what those children reminded me of.
What children?
Oh, a group of youngsters went by here a minute ago. Flowers and flags.
I suppose they were going out to the cemetery.
No doubt. I knew they reminded me of something of my own childhood. One very particular day when Porky Mason and I brought flowers and flags out to the Civil War graves in the country cemetery at home. Hmm. Goodness, Margaret, I can see that old place so clearly. A gentle slope of ground to the south of the church, with big old trees here and there, and the gravestones leaning a little this way and that, as if to make themselves more comfortable. It was really a very pleasant place, friendly and peaceful. Porky and I enjoyed sitting there talking that day. It was one of those warm, cool days, you know.
Very much like today, I imagine. And there were irises in the bouquets and bleeding hearts. Perhaps a few early peonies.
There were. And we had quite a time there at the church, running back and forth to the pump and down to the veterans' graves, filling vases and matching them up to be sure the bouquets were all fair and equal. When we were all finished, we sat down to rest in the shade.
Kind of warm, ain't it? You're kind of fat. I guess that's why you get warm when you work, Porky.
Yeah, I guess. I don't care, though. Think we got them all about fair and even, Porky?
I guess. I put an extra peony on that one over there, though, Jason. Seems kind of lonesome out there in the corner by himself.
Looks that way. But I don't think you're lonesome when you're dead.
Well, gee, I would be. Nobody to go fishing with, nobody to talk to.
Well, if you're in heaven.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What? Well, I'd rather be alive, though.
Me too.
George Jeremiah Hewitt. Born August 1st, 1845. Died September 27th, 1863.
September 21st, 1863.
Is that what it says? Oh, yeah, 21st. Aged 18 years, 1 month, 20 days.
What's it say underneath the dove? Flowers are in the way from here.
Says, died that others might live.
He was a soldier.
Well, sure, ain't that why we decorated his grave?
Gosh. He was just about as old as your brother Joe, Porky.
18. That's not very old.
How old would he be now if he hadn't been killed in the Civil War?
Well,
1863 to 1894. How long is that, Jason?
Oh, 63 to 93 is 30, and 1 is 31.
Gosh, dead for 31 years. It's a long time.
Kind of funny, isn't it? He got killed and some didn't get killed. Like your one grandfather and my uncle's.
Grandpa's two brothers got killed.
I know it.
I'm glad Grandpa wasn't killed.
I'm glad there aren't going to be any wars anymore.
Pa says there always will be.
Of course there won't. Don't do any good to kill people, Porky. And it's a sin, too. Can you imagine shooting anybody?
Of course not. Why should I shoot anybody?
You have to in a war.
Grandpa shot a man at the Battle of Atlanta. He wakes up sometimes at night crying.
Your Grandpa Mason? That swears?
Sure. He cries because he has a dream about the man he shot. The man wasn't dead right away, and Grandpa gave him a drink of water from a stream, and the man smiled and said thanks. When Grandpa remembers that, he cries.
You know what my father says?
What?
He says, instead of people going out in armies and killing each other to see who wins, they ought to get up teams and play baseball to see who wins.
Your father's a good joker. I like him.
But he wasn't joking. He means it. He says, it doesn't prove you're better than somebody else if you can beat them playing baseball. But it doesn't prove anything if you can beat them killing people either. And playing baseball, at least nobody gets killed.
Well, if you get to be a senator or the president of the United States, you can put up a law like that, Jason.
I'm not going to be president. Maybe you are, though.
Not me. I'm going to run a livery stable and get myself a team of the fastest greys you ever saw in your life.
Oh, golly, I'm sleepy, aren't you, Jason?
I think we both fell asleep, sitting there beside the grave of George Jeremiah Hewitt.
Aged 18 years. Died that others might live. And your beloved friend, Porky?
Poor old Porky. He got his livery stable all right and turned it into a garage eventually. And in 1917, he died in France. That democracy might live.
That's what we need, isn't it? The honest vision of childhood. The same kind of unspoiled vision you and Porky had, looking at the follies of the world from a country graveyard, who never should have died as they did. Oh, Jason. Then, perhaps someday that inscription really will come true, in a sad, paradoxical, roundabout way. They died that others might live.
Send in this very day for new Double Quick Ivory Flakes special bargain offer. We offer you one pair or several pairs of beautiful Boulevard brand crepe silk stockings at a marvelous saving. These stockings are pure silk from top to toe. They're knit inside out to give you that smooth, dull finish that's so flattering. So send for yours and then take care of them with new Double Quick Ivory Flakes. And see how this nightly washing care helps you get wonderful stocking wear. So get your order in the mail today. Now, here's all you do. For each pair of stockings you want, send 50 cents and one Ivory Flakes box top, either size. Address Ivory Flakes, Cincinnati, Ohio. Be sure to include your stocking size. This offer is good in the United States only. Monday, Peter Alden, the young subject of all of Christie's and Philip's discussions, appears to his real father, but in an unusual dream. Monday in Against the Storm. This is Richard Stark wishing you a pleasant weekend for Procter & Gamble the makers of ivory. 99 44 100% pure.
Such misery and pain. I know I'll never be the same since I fell for you. It's too sad, it's too bad, but I mean love. Then you snub me. Oh, what can I do? I'm still in love with you. I guess I'll never see the light. I'll get the blues about every night since I fell for you. I feel for you.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY. Ella Johnson with Since I Fell for You from 1945. We also heard an episode of Against the Storm, first broadcast on radio on May 30th, 1941. This has been the Golden Age of Radio. Classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows. On the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.